I wanted to shout this out now because, I mean, I guess it kind of fits in here, but we got nominated for a podcasting award.
Yes, the 2019 Discover Pod Awards, to be exact. And Nick, how the fuck did this happen?
I am
please
blown
tell me.
Away. And you know what? I'm going to take credit for it because I really feel like it's the use of the Loisauce sound drop. I think that it's just connected with everyone out there.
You're not my dad.
See, he just connects with everybody on that level. But I don't know how it happened. All of a sudden, I started getting blown up on social media, getting tagged from other podcasts like Ignorance Was Bliss, like Girl in Space, Varmints, Paul Chomo Ate Bugs for Cancer Research People, and our amazing, amazing friend who we absolutely love, Emily Prokop, of The Story Behind and Hate to Wait.
I sucked a dick last night.
Emily.
Jeez.
But I know Emily nominated us, and somebody else nominated us too, or whatever the case may be, but we're finalists, Justin, and we're finalists in a category against, like, Pam and Angela from The Office. The Office Ladies podcast is in the same category. Like, it's amazing to even be listed in a category with some of the other shows that we're nominated with. Absolutely blows my mind. But if you haven't voted yet, by the time you're hearing this, please, please go to our social media. You'll find links to it everywhere. Discover Pod Awards. We're in the TV and movie category. Vote for us. Like, imagine if we won. Imagine if we won and we take Loisauce and a fresh pack of ankle-length socks to an event, and we just throw those socks out of the crowd. We'll make Loisauce sign them or something, I guess. Maybe. I don't even know. I'm getting ahead of myself, probably, but yeah, the look on your face
says it all.
It's
okay to dream. It's okay to dream, though, Nick.
It's amazing, though. And everybody out there that has voted for us, and everybody out there, whoever nominated us, and whatever else the case may be, like, we are eternally grateful for any support that we get on this show. We are a tiny little indie podcast. We just chug along like everybody else. Like, we put the hard work in. We've been doing this for a long time now. And it's just like, even if we don't win, it's just like some kind of validation of our efforts, like all the hard work that we have put in for a very long time. So thank you, thank you, thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And if you haven't voted, like I said, just head over there and vote. We would appreciate it for literally forever. And we will send you Loisauce. I already said this on social media, but we will send him. You have your way with him for however long and send him on his way.
Do whatever you want with him. Take him out to dinner. Feed him some McDonald's if you
definitely
want.
McDonald's.
I mean, I know he likes that. Well, I liked the cat.
That's right. There is a there's a cat.
Aren't you gonna do your meow meow song? I thought you were gonna, you know. Well, never mind.
Meow meow.
You can't
meow 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 meow.
You can't take cues for shit from me. It's a rough night.
Meow.
The Epic Film Guys Podcast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Epic Film Guys Podcast. I am your host, Justin, and I am joined today by the god of podcasting, dun dun dun, the Loisauce.
Yes, it is I, the Loisauce. I like how I've now become the Loisauce. Like, it used to, like, I'm kind of like Batman, where it's like, I was Batman, and now I'm the Batman.
That's
I'm
right.
The Loisauce.
The anyway. Loisauce. The Loisox. The Loicoughs. The Loisneezes. I don't know. We're going to just keep adding different things to your name. Ladies and gentlemen, our good friend Nick is not going to be a part of this review episode for Mike Flanagan's Dr. Sleep. He did not see the movie.
Lame.
And he is missing in action. We don't know where you, Nick, are you? I think he's still getting groceries like a week later. I think that's what he's doing, or he's just hiding away from us. Maybe, you know, we did that episode last week with Kevin from the Real Spoilers podcast, which thank you, Kevin, for coming on. That was a fucking blast talking about Terminator with you. But maybe the scent, Loisauce, of your dirty socks really made Nick remember why he wanted to take a break in the first place. Maybe that was the whole reason why he wanted to take a break, because your socks, you're just letting them pile up. They're getting dirtier and grosser, and they're oozing stuff constantly. I mean, you gotta let them dry. I don't know.
That's
man.
A lot of cum. So anyway, let's review a movie.
Saucy doesn't want to talk about the socks. I get it. Only when Nick's around, but that's right, ladies and gentlemen. This is our main featured review episode for Thursday. We're going to be talking about Dr. Sleep, which did not perform at all this last weekend at the box office. In fact, Brian, Roland Emmerich's Midway actually took the number one spot. Can you remember the last time a Roland Emmerich movie was number one at the box office?
No, I cannot.
I was going to say, take some time to think about it, because I can't either. It didn't even seem possible.
Was it 2012? Did 2012 hit number one at the box office?
I never saw that movie in theaters. I know Nick is a gigantic fan of 2012. He'll do a full review at some point of the movie. But we're happy to be here. We're going to be talking about this movie. As you guys that have listened to the new format of the show know, this is our Thursday episode, which means it's just a featured review. That's all we're doing. Our banter, our trailer reviews, our movie talk discussions are going to be on Mondays now. So if that's something that you love listening to, make sure to tune in Mondays as well. But for Thursday, we're just giving you the goods. We're going to talk about one or two movies and review those movies in full for your listening pleasure. So that's right. We're going to dig right in on Dr. Sleep. And Brian, for our listeners that are unaware, that are uninitiated on what Dr. Sleep is all about, why don't you fill them in?
This is a film written and directed by Mike Flanagan, who brought us such films as Oculus, Ouija, Origin of Evil, Gerald's Game, and of course the Netflix series The Haunting of Hill House, which I've not yet seen, but I've heard is great. So this film acts as a filmed version of Stephen King's sequel to his novel The Shining, as well as a sequel to Stanley Kubrick's 1980 film. So 40 years after, you know, young Danny Torrance was traumatized by his experiences at the Overlook Hotel, he is now played by Ewan McGregor, and he has turned to drugs and alcohol to numb his senses and suppress his memories. Memories that are awakened by a young girl named Abra Stone, played by Kylie Curran, who, like Danny, can shine or see and interact with spirits. And the two of them find themselves hunted by the ruthless cult leader Rose, played by Rebecca Ferguson, who feeds off the shine of innocence in order to achieve immortality. Now Danny must confront his demons and awaken his powers in a life and death battle that takes him back to the Overlook. And that's about the size of it.
On paper, it sounds like a really interesting idea. I'm actually shocked, Brian, that there wasn't more interest from general audiences for this movie. I mean, it seems like the trailer was good. It didn't look like it was a really super scary movie or anything, but The Shining is one of the most beloved movies in cinematic history. Maybe the fact that, you know, the original cast isn't involved, I don't know. The idea of a sequel to The Shining in general doesn't really sound that appealing to a lot of people, I think. But
well, The Shining is, you know, it's iconic. It's a masterpiece. And you don't want, you know, anything to taint that necessarily. It's like making a sequel to, you know, Casablanca, or, you know, you just don't do it. But I think, and I don't want to get too far ahead of myself here, but I think this film is kind of amazing because it's three things. It's an adaptation of the book Dr. Sleep. It's a sequel to The Shining book, and it's a sequel to The Shining movie. And somehow this film is faithful to each version. I think it's amazing as a film and an adaptation. Maybe it was the release date. I mean, you released this film a week after Halloween. You know, that could have hurt it. It could also have been the marketing. It could also just be that people are tired of movies that aren't superhero movies. You know what I mean? Or John Wick or whatever. Like, it's one of those things where people saw it and they're like, oh, I can wait for streaming, or oh, I don't want to see that. Which is a shame, because I really liked this movie. In fact, I was unprepared for how moved I was by this movie, and we can get into that. But I have to throw it over to you, Justin, for your initial thoughts on Dr. Sleep.
Well, I had actually zero expectations for this movie. I wasn't really blown away by the trailers. I wasn't really all that invested. But of course, being a fan of The Shining, I'm not a super fan by any means, but I'm a fan of it. I, you know, recently acquired the brand new 4K Ultra HD disc and watched that through in preparation for this, and was blown away.
Listeners, take a shot every time you hear Justin say, 4K Ultra 4K HD.
Ultra HD. Sorry, man. I'm passionate about the film medium and those restorations. Come on, man. That's what it's all about. But I watched that in preparation. Beautiful transfer, so I was in awe. And hey, listen, you can't talk shit. You screened that same transfer at Alamo Drafthouse for a packed house over the summer. You yourself saw it, so you know exactly what I'm talking about.
It is stunning, yes. And The Shining is one of the earliest straight horror films that I can recall seeing. I saw the film on TV, and there are images in it that are just, you know, it's pure nightmare fuel, and it did kind of stick in my brain, and those images are like seared into my brain forever. And Kubrick was just such a master at that, creating that real sense of terror. This film doesn't really have that. This film is more of a dark fantasy than, you know, anything close to the visceral terror of the original. This is really more of a story about a man wrestling with his demons, both personal and supernatural. And it's a little bit more character-driven than the original Shining. But anyway, I'm sorry to go off on a tangent.
No. Hey, man, that's what this is all about. We're just having a good talk about this movie. And yeah, the movie's about recovery at its core. It's about this man dealing with his demons in more ways than one, as you said perfectly. And my initial thoughts were, I thought the movie was okay. You know, I didn't dislike the movie in any way. I feel like the first half of it for me was really slow to get going. I think Ewan McGregor is fantastic in the movie. I think he's great as Danny Torrance. But leading up to it, nothing really blew me away. Nothing really, you know, kind of pushed me into that, like, yeah, like that excitement mode. Like, I can't wait to see what's going to happen next. I just think it took a little bit too long for things to get going. But as you said perfectly, it is more character driven than anything else. I would just wish that something more serious would have happened. Some kind of a deeper conflict would have happened earlier on. Now, the Rose of the Hat character, we're going to touch on here in the review. And I think that Rebecca Ferguson is absolutely magnetic as Rose of the Hat. However, I forgot what publication posted this. I forgot what independent film critic said this. They said something like Rose the Hat is like the new horror icon. And I'm sorry, but you're wrong. Okay, because she's like the least bit threatening out of any horror icon I've seen in the past couple years. She is magnetic. She oozes sensuality. And she is slightly menacing, but she's not very threatening to me.
Well, she's a child murderer, which I think we should mentioned the fact that she, you know, finds young, vulnerable, innocent people and murders them in a pretty horrific fashion. I mean, this movie doesn't have a whole lot of gore or anything like that, but it is pretty horrific the way that she steals the...
Yeah, dude, she sucks the life out of them, literally.
Yeah, and those scenes are pretty horrifying. So, I mean, it's a threatening villain in that it's threatening what she's doing, but Rebecca Ferguson herself, and I don't mean this to sound demeaning or anything like that, but I think she's distractingly hot. So I was kind of thinking,
she's so nice to look at.
I was thinking more about that than like being scared by her necessarily. But she does have those moments where she just kind of like, you can tell she's relishing in the role. She has some great scenes later on in the film when she's facing off against Ewan McGregor. So I don't know about horror icon, but I think she is good in the role, and I would like to see more from Rebecca Ferguson. I just really like her in every role that I've seen her in. I think Ewan McGregor is really what holds this movie together, and his relationship with Abra. So, I mean, we focus on Danny early on, and as I said, he's just completely drowned
himself. He's wasting his life away.
Well, yeah, he's drowned himself in alcohol, and he's doing all sorts of cocaine and pills and everything because he's trying to suppress, you know, the trauma. And as I said, I feel like there's this great thematic through line in the film about addiction that was kind of touched upon in The Shining, but really came full circle in this one. Because The Shining, I feel like, at least Kubrick's film, is about succumbing to addiction, whereas this film is about, you know, overcoming addiction and trauma and recovering from it. And I thought that was extremely powerful, especially seeing how Danny starts off as a character at literally the lowest of the low point you could be. And he discovers his purpose through Abra and what his powers are meant for and how he can use them to confront his demons.
And Abra, for those listening, obviously, we're going to get into deep spoilers here soon, so there's not going to be a spoiler warning on this review, really. We're just going to kind of throw it all on the table. When Nick's not here, we're bad boys and we play however we want to.
He's also not here to play the sound, so
that's
the
right.
sound drop,
that's right.
So I'm fine with that.
So Abra is she's a very young girl who learns that she has the shine, as they call it, at a very young age at her birthday party, which is a pretty chilling scene, actually, when she has a magician at her birthday party and he's doing like a spoon trick or something. And then her parents go inside the kitchen and they see all the silverware that's in the kitchen stuck to the ceiling. And they learn that she has this power. And she connects with Danny through their connection with the shine. And that's how they begin communicating.
They develop this friendship, working relationship with each other. The movie makes multiple references to him being kind of like not wanting to come across as like a creepy uncle. Like there's a scene where they meet in the park.
That's
for the
actually
first time.
A line, right?
Yeah, where he's like, I don't know if we should be like, if I should be seen sitting on a bench talking to you. People might get the wrong idea.
Yeah, he said something like in today's day and age or something like that, which is totally true because they even show like, you know, just regular people walking by, like looking at them very strangely.
Right. But I think they learn to depend on each other in a way because they're connected through their psychic powers. When one character is in danger, the other rescues them. And they kind of rescue each other throughout. And I really liked that dynamic. Kylie Curran, this is her film debut, and I thought she was terrific in the role.
I was just going to throw that out there for some of the positives they have on the movie. I thought she was fantastic. I thought she was the perfect choice for the role. There's something very, very realistic about her, like, and very natural about her. And a lot of young actresses at that age, it's either 50-50 for me on whether or not they come off as being natural for that age and their performance. And I thought she was actually fantastic. And I think their chemistry together is really what made her perfect for this role. I could just see those two in an audition just doing a quick test together and having it literally be apparent that these two are meant to play these roles together.
Absolutely. I mentioned being moved by the film. And this kind of hit me because, and maybe this is a personal thing and others may not understand, but I think we all have a fear of, you know, growing old and dying. But for me, it's always been, you know, a fear that I've had of growing old and dying and having no one around when I die, like dying alone, essentially. So there's a subplot in the film where Danny gets a job working in hospice, and he uses The Shining to comfort the dying patients. And I thought that was, well, first of all, it makes him an incredibly empathetic character to us, the audience, because it shows that, you know, even though he is at rock bottom, he's like reaching out and showing compassion to others and using his abilities for good. As I said, this movie is about like finding purpose when you're at your lowest point. And when you have a gift that you're not sure how to use and you find a way to an outlet to use it. I started tearing up at those scenes because, you know, it taps into a fear that I have while also being a strong thematic point for the character. So I loved all of those scenes of him in the hospital. What did you think, Justin, about Danny's character in those scenes in particular?
Well, I liked the cat.
That's right. There is a there's a cat.
Aren't you going to do your meow meow song? I thought you were going to, you know, well, never mind.
Meow, meow. You can't. Meow, 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 meow.
You can't take cues for shit from me. It's a rough night.
Meow.
No, for real, though. I mean, like, I was curious. I mean, like, when this cat just knows when people are about to pass away and it goes into these different rooms. And I did find it very touching. I did like that he was using it, using his shine for that reason, because up until that point, I mean, obviously the character is down and out. I love how the movie opens and it's a flashback. And I need to get into this now because this is one of the biggest achievements that this film employs and showcases. And I was personally impressed by how Mike Flanagan recreated scenes from The Shining and scenes that took place within, around, or after the events of The Shining, when we see Danny as a young child. And I really, really loved when he's a kid and he's sitting on the bench and he's talking to Dick and he's teaching himself how to take these entities and lock them away in these little boxes in his brain inside so they can't bother him anymore. So he has a way of being able to deal with these things. I just think all of the things that Flanagan did, which to most people would seem unachievable, he did brilliantly. The movie opens, if I recall correctly, with Danny riding his little trike around the overlook again. And
it takes you right back there.
I mean, I felt like I was watching The Shining again, like from every movement, from even the way that the bike is, you know, swaying back and forth and then going around each corner. I was like, whoa, dude, I was just watching this movie and you know that it's done brand new. It's not from The Shining. And I read a bunch of interviews with him, and we'll get into this a little bit more when we talk about, you know, actors that he cast to play characters from The Shining instead of bringing back people and de-aging them. But he said that he didn't want to use footage from The Shining. He wanted to do it all new. He didn't want people to go, you're copping out, you're just including footage from that classic movie to make your movie better. He wanted to redo it.
He also did not want to use CGI in the case of any of the actors or the environments, right, which is why I think this is a way bigger achievement than the Shining sequence in Ready Player One, because that was all digital. It's very easy to do, you know, create things in a digital environment. But I did love the iconic moments that were recreated. Obviously, the first hint that you know that this is new footage is that the actor playing young Danny has blue eyes to match Ewan McGregor's blue eyes, whereas Danny Lloyd had brown eyes in the original film. And that's the moment where you say, okay, this is connecting to The Shining, the original film, but it's also its own thing. Because then we get Wendy Torrance on screen, played by Alex Esso, who is a terrific actress who was in a film called...
Oh, we love her. We love her.
She's in a film called Starry Eyes a few years ago. And
yes.
I think she is an immense talent, and she channels Shelley Duvall like no other in this role. It's spooky.
She sounds identical. even from her movements and the way that she would show her teeth, because obviously she's got a very large mouth, and she has a very, like, her teeth are very big. And the way that she would keep her mouth open to accentuate certain words when she would speak and things like that, she nailed all of that. However, I will say this right now, but this is something that is, you know, pretty much the way they make movies now. She is way, way more attractive than Shelley Duvall. And I'm not hating on Shelley Duvall. I'm just saying in The Shining, Shelley Duvall's character is... I would actually consider her unattractive.
Oh,
she's purposely. I think that it's meant to be that way. I'm not saying she's unattractive in everything she's in, but they made her look as plain as possible. She's not a sexy, pretty woman in that movie. However, in this movie, no. I mean,
I don't see how that's relevant. I mean,
I'm just bringing it up because the fact that they cast somebody that is more attractive, that I think it's a thing that is a normal thing in today's way of filmmaking. I'm just making a point. I'm just making an observation.
Thanks,
because I knew who it was. And we both, you know, that we both find that woman attractive. God damn it. Because both love Starry Eyes. And I'm just saying that she was a great fit because, again, she's only playing flashback. All of her mannerisms, her performance is brilliant for as small that it is in this movie. And I wish we get to see more of her in the role because she literally embodied Duvall's performance perfectly.
And I think Carl Lumbly as Dick Halloran, played by Scatman Crothers in the original film, was also terrific. So it's like you know that Scatman Crothers obviously can't be in the film. You know that Shelley Duvall can't be in the film. So they do their best to embody those characters, but obviously it's different enough. I think Flanagan like trusted his audience in that they would recognize those same characters and kind of put aside the fact that, hey, that's not Shelley Duvall. That's not, you know, Scatman Crothers.
I'll say I was able to do that up until the ending. I was perfectly fine with it.
Well,
I
can talk about the ending a little later on, because I have issues with the ending.
There are certain things you're able to do, and there are other things that you should never touch. And I get why if you're going to go in, you're going to go in all the way. But I think there are just some things that you can't do it. You just can't do it. But for the most part, yes.
And at least they didn't try to CGI, you know, the actors, because the technology is there. They could have done it. But I think Flanagan trusted his audience.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, like, also, you have to remember, not only are there homages and little Easter eggs to Kubrick's film in here, but I know that there were references to Mick Garris's version of The Shining that he did for the made-for-TV movie as well. So they tried to actually honor that as well as in this movie. So Flanagan had, like, dude, he had his work cut out for him a lot in this movie. I can't even imagine the immense pressure one would have, because I know he's a huge fan of that movie in general. And then King actually, you know, worked with him on the sidelines a little bit on this movie, which is basically what King does for all of the movies based on his works now at his old age. He wants to be involved a little bit, you know, be on the set a little bit and have some talks with the filmmakers and everything.
Well, I can see why King...
And especially this one, right?
Yeah, I can see why King is satisfied with this because he's very famously not a fan of Stanley Kubrick's film. I can see why he endorsed this film, because I think this is a very earnest attempt to satisfy both fans of Stephen King's novel and Stanley Kubrick's film. It really attempts to like reconcile and appease these two warring camps, you know, these two, you know, I think that this film is the best of both worlds. And I think the ending even incorporates elements of the Shining novel that the original film did not. So it still acts as a sequel to the 1980 film, but it also is strangely, it's an adaptation of the original novel in some way. So it's this beautiful like marriage of all these different of these different things. But I think once the film moves into its third act, it starts to become like The Shining greatest hits a little bit. And I had problems with that, because I thought it was unnecessary to, for example, like, okay, yes, certain scenes and images can be replayed, but I thought it leaned a little bit too heavily on just showing us what we've seen in The Shining before.
I felt like it was, hey, remember this?
Yeah.
Hey, now we're going to walk down the hall. Remember this too?
We're going to get into like proper spoilers now. So there's like a moment where Rebecca Ferguson's walking down the hall. She turns and she looks and she sees the elevator, and you see the blood start to come out of the elevator. And it's shot, again, very impressively, like exactly,
looks perfect, actually.
Yeah, exactly like it was shot in Stanley Kubrick's film. And then it cuts back to her and she just kind of smiles and walks away. And that's the end of the scene. And to me, it felt, well, first of all, unnecessary. And second of all, I felt like it was using it as a crutch, because up until then, the film had been kind of creating its own memorable scenes. And again, there's I'm not going to say outright terrifying, but there is some kind of haunting imagery throughout. But I feel like the film didn't do enough to establish its own striking, iconic imagery, and instead kind of leaned a little bit too heavily on Kubrick's, especially because like Danny walking through the hotel would have been enough. You know, there's that scene that you see in the trailer when he kind of sticks his face through the doorway
where
Jack Nicholson axed his way through it and stuck his face in the hole that he made with the axe. Like, that would have been enough, because we've seen The Shining. We know what happens and what imagery was conveyed in that original film. We don't need to see it again. You know what I mean? So you see the ghost where he's like, you know, great party, isn't it? And you see all of that again, where it's necessary.
One thing I think we need to touch on a little bit, because we've jumped all over the place, which you and I do very often when we're let off the leash when Nick's not here to rein us in. We haven't really talked much about the idea of the True Knot, which is, you know, Rose the Hat, she kind of heads this group, and basically what they are is just like a caravan of beings that they kill these young kids, they kill any psychic human they possibly can, and to suck the life out of them so they can live almost in an eternal way. I think that's something we haven't really touched on. I just wanted to know what you thought of that as like the driving force of evil in the movie. Because I thought that the Rose the Hat character could have been more threatening, but I liked the idea of this caravan of, they're just basically living like normal people. You know, they're not threatening until they need to try to be. They're just kind of like living off these people's souls in a way.
Almost like the band of vampires in Near Dark, kind of. Just kind of like this troop of people who feed off of others. And they're almost like addicted to...
They are addicted to it, because they beg for it. Yeah, they're at times they're begging for it. Like, we need more, we haven't had enough of it. Like, you can see them jonesing for it.
Which also feeds into the theme of addiction in the film.
Of course it does.
I like the concept. The scenes where they're actually, you know, sucking the shine out of people, it's very horrific. You know, they spend a lot of time dwelling on the victim, screaming and struggling, and it's very harrowing scenes.
Dare I say, Brian, it's just as horrific and disturbing as it is to me beautiful in a way. There was something strangely beautiful that I found about them all circling around a dying being and sucking the life out of them, the way that it was done. I don't know how to really put it into words, but just for some reason, Brian, I found it beautiful in a really horrific fashion. And I mean, even the scene like where for some reason Jacob Tremblay shows up, you know, and like, I'm like, they're like, he's this little baseball player, little leaguer. And they end up like, hey, you know, they track him down. They go, they follow him. And it really is a truly horrific scene. And they all just like basically rope him down and brutally murder this small child. And they're all just like sucking the life out of him. Like if they're like sucking, you know, shooting heroin or something.
Yeah, Jacob Tremblay was in Before I Wake, which was another Mike Flanagan film. So they've worked together before, but that was unexpected. I was not expecting to see Jacob Tremblay in this film for just that one scene. But anyhow, so yeah, I mean, there's lots of like beautiful slash spooky imagery in this. There's a scene, which is one of my favorites of the movie for sure. Rose the Hat uses astral projection to get into Abra's mind and search for information. There's a scene where she's like floating in the air, and the way that was shot was just stunning.
Gorgeous, dude. I was in awe over that shot. I was like, whoa. Like, it really just proved to me that, like, Flanagan, let's face it here, regardless if I was blown away by the movie or if I loved it or not, Flanagan really is a visionary for this genre in general. Like, he really is up there with Astor and Peele and Juan, you name it. He's one of the modern names that needs to be in the mix for one of the best guys doing horror today. And he had a handful of visuals in this that literally did knock my socks off.
Yeah, I mean, he's no Kubrick. Like, again, like, there's no image in this movie that's going to be anywhere close to being iconic as...
Hold on. There was a shot when Rose the Hat first shows up to the Overlook, and it was a nice wide shot that started out right behind her and it zoomed out from behind her, and it was a slow slow pan shot, and it was just her in the middle of the shot standing in front of the hotel, very stoic. I thought that was as close as we were going to get to a Kubrick style quality shot in there.
Oh yeah, no, I'm talking about like the imagery specifically. The cinematography in this is also just extremely impressive, but I do think that the movie kind of makes the case for existing based on the characters and how it furthers the story of The Shining and does its own thing with it. Like it's really less The Shining and more like Firestarter or something like that. Like really like less horror and more dark fantasy. So I think Flanagan hit all the right notes with this one.
Yeah. And of course we could sit here and list all of the frickin' references in there. I mean, obviously you hear the original score theme from The Shining. There's music whenever it plays. It's some of the same music that you would hear play in The Shining. I mean, even at the end, you know, when the confrontation happens, Danny's wearing an extremely similar outfit to what his father wore. It's different colors, but he's wearing like an overcoat, bomber jacket and a flannel shirt when he's holding the axe. I mean, there are so many different things in this movie that are little hints to previous King's work or to The Shining itself. But I do agree with you 100%, Brian, in the sense that this isn't really a horror movie. I didn't feel there are some creepy moments. There are some creepy shots of walking down the hallway, and there was a couple tiny jump scares that really kind of maybe got a couple audience members around me. But overall, it wasn't really scary. And I think that maybe that was Flanagan's intent. I think maybe he understood like nothing's ever going to scare audiences the way that The Shining scared audiences when it was released. Because let's face it, Brian, rarely do movies in today's day and age do that to audiences. I mean, that was a movie that really scared the shit out of everybody.
I feel like if you showed like a Gen Zer The Shining, I feel like they'll think it's boring or something. I don't think they'll get that same visceral punch that people felt back in 1980 when the film was released. I found The Shining to be terrifying, but I don't know. I don't know how this generation feels. Wow, I sound like an old man.
Listen to this guy. He's in his mid fucking 20s and he's trying to pretend he's like me.
You know what I mean.
I totally agree with you. It's the same thing as when they showed Halloween to a group of young film students a few years back, and a lot of them said it was boring. I mean, The Shining builds and builds and builds, and it's so much more psychological than any horror films that had been, you know, before up until that point. I mean, there's a lot of thought process in that movie, and there's a lot of things that you could pick apart. Whatever you do, don't listen to Brian. Go watch the Room 237 documentary. It'll fuck with your brain. They're all crazy. All those people are crazy. But if you want to see a lot of crazy people dissect that movie, go watch that documentary. I know how much you like that documentary, Brian.
That documentary is a waste of my time. It's just not saying. Even like, I mean, it's interesting in that, yes, we're listening to total crackpots try to derive meaning from this film. That's interesting in and of itself, but it's just a very poorly made film.
I'm just saying there's so many things in the movie. That's why that documentary exists, because people have sat and picked apart The Shining so much. Will they be doing that with Dr. Sleep? No. I highly doubt that.
Probably not in the same way, but there is a lot of thematic depth to this movie. And I do think that there's plenty of merit in the filmmaking and the performances and everything like that. So even though people might not obsessively, you know, find tons and tons of hidden meaning from this movie, there is a lot to appreciate, and there is a lot to soak in with this movie. I know we wanted to talk about the scene towards the end. I started going there earlier when I was talking about the showdown at the Overlook, but there is a cameo, sort of, so to speak, of a character. Well, why don't you talk about what happens?
All right. Let's just make this as blunt as possible. Mike Flanagan casts the kid from E.T. as Jack fucking Torrance. Okay.
Right, so they kind of have an echo of the scene where Jack Torrance, played by Jack Nicholson in the original film, has to talk with Lloyd the bartender.
Yes.
In this film, Danny also has a conversation with Lloyd, who it turns out is Jack Torrance, they're one and the same. So this scene didn't really work for me. Number one, because I feel like Danny should recognize the spirit of his father, or at least like maybe he was talking to Lloyd and then it kind of he transformed into his father. I don't really know. So the scene already starts out kind of strangely, and then it's revealed, like, you see Jack Torrance, played by this other actor, in the scene. And I was fine with the fact that he wasn't played by Jack Nicholson. I was fine with the fact that the voice wasn't exactly, it didn't sound exactly like
Jack
Nicholson.
Right. Very far from it.
Again, I had moved past that, but we did not need to see Jack Torrance in this film.
No, we didn't need to see it. And it was almost an excuse for them to go, look what we can do in a different way than what we usually see. I do commend them for not trying to do a de-aging. Now, let's make this clear. Mike Flanagan did reach out to Jack Nicholson and his agents, in which Nicholson replied, you know, he was flattered to ask to be involved. Even in a cameo, they brought up having him do a cameo. He declined. He's really serious about his retirement from movie making. But I guess he did give his blessing. He was fully aware of the movie was happening. So Henry Thomas, who's worked on Hill House with Mike Flanagan. Yes, it's the kid from E.T. He's the one that ended up playing Jack Torrance. And though, you know, at a side angle, I definitely saw a little bit of Jack Torrance in there. He kind of looked like him.
The posture was there, like he nailed
it, it took me out of the movie, Brian, and that's the last thing I wanted to do with this movie. I think all the recreations up until that point, all of the performances of different actors or actresses playing roles of characters we know from The Shining, I was totally fine with. It's just this one. I just think that this isn't one you touch. You know, like for me, it's sacred. This movie is all about recovery and facing your fears and moving on. And that's obviously him doing that in his own way. When he goes to the Overlook, he's not scared anymore. He forces himself to go there in order to save someone that he really cares about. And in doing so, he has to face the image of his father and he has to get past that. And I liked that idea. I just didn't need to see a scene with them basically redoing the bar scene from The Shining and him just looking at an actor that was made up to look like his dad, to look like Jack Nicholson's character from The Shining.
Yeah,
just,
I mean, I feel
it
like
went on for way too long.
I feel like if it had just focused like the scene was doing, it had was just focused on Danny's face and you just heard the voice of Lloyd, the bartender, that would have been sufficient. Like just we could still get
or even see a silhouette from the back or even see from the back. I don't need to see the face because, I mean, I just didn't need to see a focus in on that. I mean, that's just my opinion, being a fan of The Shining and of this movie. This is one of the things that I felt that it got wrong. But I get Flanagan's mindset. If we're going to go in, we're going to go all in. If I'm going to show these versions, new versions of these characters that look and sound kind of like their previous versions, why not go all the way? And I think that for most fans, based on what I've seen and what I've heard, they kind of feel really similar to how we feel today. To close out my thoughts, I thought the ending, it was a great climax. I think it was a great buildup. I actually really loved seeing the recreation of the Overlook. I loved all the scenes at the end. All in all, Rose the Hat was a pretty formidable foe. I mean, very well performed. I mean, like you said earlier on, Brian, who doesn't want to look at Rebecca Ferguson in a cute hat the whole movie? I mean, and that's not me making fun. I'm just saying she looked great on screen and she literally oozed charisma throughout. And McGregor was at the top of his game. I can't remember the last time I've seen him perform that good in a movie where he was that fantastic. He was that deep. And I think the characters were all written fairly too very well. For me, this movie is going to be a 7 out of 10. I thought it was good. It didn't blow me out of the water. It's nowhere near the level of The Shining. Not that it ever would or could or was trying to be. And I think that most of my points are coming from the technical achievements that, you know, came from Flanagan really putting his all into this movie. The performances, the cinematography, the music. But I have to say, I almost want to take a point off. If we were doing halves on this show, I would take a half a point off for the constant fucking heartbeat thumping throughout the goddamn movie. The whole movie, I hear ba-bump, ba-bump, ba-bump. Like a few times, I'm totally fine with that. But really, do I have to hear a heartbeat constantly throughout the whole movie?
I noticed that too, and I'm not sure if that was part of the score music or if that was just a sound effect that was added by Flanagan or what, but I found it very distracting. It was a distraction for me, and I was going to mention it, but I didn't want to appear like I was nitpicking, but yes, I do.
Well, I mean, like, it would take me out of the movie, Brian. I mean, I would consider it nitpicking if it didn't, but it would come up when there were quiet scenes where there would be no dialogue, and it would just be like a quiet shot, and then you just hear ba-bump, ba-bump, and for no apparent reason at all.
Yeah, they did employ that a lot. Where like they would cut all the sound out and then all you'd hear was a heartbeat.
Brian, got to hear it from you. Other than I got to hear it because we didn't talk about this. Jocelyn Donahue from the House of the Devil shows up as Abra's mom in this movie. And I didn't even know she was in this movie. So you had just screened The House of the Devil at Alamo a few weeks ago before Halloween, which is a gigantic treat. And I think it was really cool seeing her in this movie.
Oh, absolutely. It's always great to see her pop up. To close out my review, I think that this is a great screenplay. And I say that because pretty much every single scene, every single line works to move the story and the characters forward. Everything's consequential. Everything that's set up is paid off. It's a story with purpose. And I feel like when you have kind of that economical screenplay where, like, nothing's there that doesn't need to be there, except for a few things towards the end when it turns into the greatest hits. Every scene and every line has a purpose. And I think that's the sign of a great screenplay. I was very pleasantly surprised by how emotionally sincere it was. And again, tackling The Shining, whether it's the book or the movie, is a very daunting task. And I think Flanagan was more than up to it. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10 for me, for Dr. Sleep.
So that's it. So we both recommend the movie. Unfortunately, like we said earlier on in the review, it's not doing well at the box office. And that's just the way the cookie crumbles, baby. But I mean, if you're still wanting to wait until home video, I'm sure it'll be out in a few months and you'll be able to catch it. And, spiritual successor. And in many ways, it is a pretty faithful, if not 100% faithful, sequel to Kubrick's film.
At the end, maybe a little bit too faithful.
Yeah,
it did
yeah,
not I mean, need to recreate scenes and shots from the film we've already seen.
We know that, but in today's day and age, we know that these movies that are sequels or remakes to past films that we know and love, they kind of have to have that nostalgia factor there, and sometimes even more so at the forefront than others. And I think that's why the movie does that. And some fans probably loved it. And for me, like I said, I loved seeing Danny stick his head through the hole in the door, and then he's reinspecting the red rum on the door and going into the different rooms. I mean, like, for me, that was the experience of seeing this character. Great. Yeah, going through that. But I get why you're saying what you're saying. If you haven't seen the movie yet, we're not going to spoil the entire thing for you. I mean, the final showdown and everything, you see a lot of stuff that is pretty much greatest hits, and that's just the way movies are made today, so it is what it is. But that is the end of our review show for Mike Flanagan's Dr. Sleep. Let us know when we post this review what you think of the film in the comments and what you think of this review. If you haven't yet, we have to plead with you. We have to beg. We love you guys. If you're listening to the show and you like the show, you like what you're hearing, you love the epic film, guys, please, please, please head on over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. Tell us why you like the show, what you want to hear more of. You guys are the reason why we do this show, and we love hearing from you. Other than that, we are still, as of this moment of this recording, one of the finalists and nominees for the 2019 Discover Pod Awards. Loy Sauce, we got nominated for Best TV and Movie Podcast, and we're right up there with some podcasts that I can't believe we're in the same list with. It's absolutely fantastic, and it's a huge honor just to be nominated. But if you like us, if you want to support us, please, please, please head on over to our Facebook page and our social media pages, that we have links to where you can vote for the epic film, guys. If we won this, I mean, this would be such a huge opportunity for us as a podcast. And as always, we love you now, but we would love you even more. But Saucy, for those of the people out there that are listening to us for the first time and want to find us on social media and their pod catchers, where can they find us?
You can find us at Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, pretty much wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find us on social media at Epic Film Guys, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
That's right. So we love you guys. We appreciate you listening. And next week, we have no idea what we're going to be talking about, but it will probably be fun. And Loy Sauce will probably bring more dirty socks to the table. But I want to thank you guys for listening once again. I am Justin.
And I'm Loy Sauce.
And we will see your asses. Yeah.
Ugh. What the hell was that? At the movies.
Yeah.